So in habeas corpus, the king had many different courts. He had the court of the exchequer, he had the common law, the equity, the admiralty, maritime, you know, star chamber. It had all kinds of courts. And courts are like bureaucracies. I mean, that's all they are, really. And they like to expand their territories. So if you were, let's say, in an admiralty court, and the admiralty court was trying to do equity, you could go to the equity court and tell the equity court that the admiralty court's infringing on their area. And so then the second court, the equity court, which is the second court, would now assume superior jurisdiction, would look at the case and decide whether or not it was in its specialty area. And if it decided that it was in its specialty area, it would take the case. Well, what would happen is that when it took the case, it would then, because it's better qualified, that's the theory, it would decide what to do about the case. Well, bureaucrats, you know, bureaucrats actually are a very corporate politics-oriented group. And they love to do each other in. I mean, gaining a point on the competition is always fun for a bureaucrat. They have nothing else to do, really. And so this habeas corpus became a tool for territorial protection. And so when somebody came, and if that somebody was not the common enemy of both courts, often what they do is they would tell the first court, look, this is not in your jurisdiction. You don't know what you're doing. This case shouldn't have been in your place. They dismiss the case and let the guy go. And habeas corpus is the only known right that grew stronger with time. Because habeas corpus, the primary purpose was not to get a determination if you were of your rights. The real purpose was territorial protection by the bureaucrats. Okay? And so they would get, it became known as the great writ of liberty, but that was what was really going on behind the scenes. Well, now you're a sovereign, you're always subject to your own court, and by the way, be very careful who you hire into your court for that reason. You're subject to your own court. Now, the only way anybody can get jurisdiction over you is if they can produce an injured body, right? Corpus delicti. If they can produce the corpus delicti, well, then obviously they get jurisdiction. That's the fundamental of jurisdiction. Well, what habeas corpus is here in America, you're sovereign, you're subject to your own court. So you complain to your own court. You petition your own court for habeas corpus. You're saying, hey, I don't belong in that court. I belong in this court, the one that has jurisdiction over me already. And so your court pulls over this other court stuff, looks at it, and says, where's the injured party? You send out the notice. You say, all right, you guys, why are you taking jurisdiction? What's going on? You have 3 days to answer. Okay? They come back. If they don't provide a satisfactory answer, case is gone. You start issuing orders, dismissing. So it's your court versus their court. Remember, habeas corpus is not a legal proceeding. Sure, it may be subject, the way things are handled is like in the Code of Civil Procedure or the, you know, the United States Civil Code, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. It's not a legal proceeding at all. What it is it's a family fight between courts trying to figure out who has jurisdiction. That's why it's so simple. You think they want to throw all that load on themselves, making up paperwork the right way? That's why the paperwork's so simple. It's a family fight between courts, and once the family settles who's got jurisdiction of this area, then they move on. But that's what, when you do a habeas corpus, if you are in your sovereign capacity and you move for a habeas corpus in a court of record, you outrank the other courts, and you can issue orders if they fail. And you know what's interesting is that whenever I file a habeas corpus, they never answer. You notice that? Because generally they can get away with it, with not answering. They probably make a phone call to the judge and saying, hey, what's going on here? What are you going to do? The judge says, don't worry about it. Take care of it. That's probably what actually happens. That's the informal system behind the real system. Okay. When you start issuing orders, that's going to surprise them. You ever notice you put in a habeas corpus, nothing happens for months, and then suddenly they come through with an order denying it? You know why?
You didn't issue an answer.
Well, they didn't issue the answer. But that isn't why they waited. What, they were waiting for you to do something. They were waiting for you to move your own court. You didn't. So obviously, under parens patria rules, everybody know what parens patria is? That's the patronage or the parentage of the government, the king over the citizens. If you don't know what you're doing, you're obviously not competent, so the king steps in and takes care of you. Or in other words, you didn't do anything, you didn't move your court, so they move for you. They issue the orders. That's why they wait all that time. The rules say you've got to be 3 days to have to answer, and then 5 days have a hearing. They don't do it. They're waiting for you to do it. You've got to issue those orders. It's your court. By what authority do they assume? Now, when I put my papers in, I don't explain to them that they have to produce an injured body. What I do is I put in my habeas corpus papers. I say, I don't know why they're attacking me. I let them figure it out what the requirements are. And then, if they don't come up with it, then I make the ruling. By then, it's too late for them to answer, if they did answer in the first place. Okay. All right, so that's a little bit about habeas corpus. Finally, the last thing, I'm skimming over this pretty fast because I just wanted to get those fundamentals down before we get into the motion stuff. Magna Carta. We have...
What do you find is the most effective strategy in using habeas corpus?
Well, first of all, we haven't had any real luck with it. We've been able to like shock them, and then it takes them time to figure out what to do next.
You did have luck. I did it, and it worked.
Oh, you did it, and it worked?
Yeah, I emailed you and said what to do. They sent over to the appellate court.
Wait. Get on the microphone.
Microphone.
Okay, so you and I talked about this, and
right.
And
no,
go ahead and talk.
It was in San Marcos. In San Diego, North County. And I tried several different things. And I said, well, this isn't working, so I...
Speak to the crowd.
What's that?
Speak louder so they can hear him back.
Okay. And so I sent in the habeas corpus, and they gave up, sent it over to the appeals division, whatever that was, and they told me where that was. And I went over there, and I said... Okay, where is the papers? They didn't have it. I said, well, file this. And what I did is made an order of the court as one of the people to dismiss the case completely. And it's on the top. Now, she didn't take it and stamp it and file it. She said it stamped it with something received. I says, fine, put it in there.
Right.
Never heard of them again. That was about 3 years ago.
Okay, so it stopped them. We've been good at stopping people, but we haven't been good at collecting judgments and things. I'm sure we'll get there eventually, but at least we've stopped them. That's the main thing that we've, in other cases, not habeas corpus, but doing other techniques, we've stopped them. They just, like, the case fades away. Yes, sir?
You have the judgment, and it's just a collection issue.
No, it's not just a collection issue, because, you know, if it's a judgment, and remember, a lot of this concept that I'm bringing in about being nice to everybody is a relatively new concept. Because in the past, people have not been nice. They've been angry, upset, because they're getting a raw deal, and then, of course, it just, you know...
Nice
does work, yes. So we haven't had good experience, but what we have in these fights, if you do get a judgment, and you go to execute the judgment, and by that time the sheriff is clued in, and what the sheriff will do is, if you have a writ of execution... He calls up the guy and he says, you know, I got to be out there at 2 o'clock. I've got this judgment to enforce against you. Will you be there?
Oh.
And the guy says, yeah, I'll be here. Sure. And so then the sheriff sends his deputy out. The deputy gets there. The guy's not there. He comes back. Oh, I couldn't find him. Okay? If they really wanted to find him, they could. But the point is that they're pitting form against substance. And the idea is that, yeah, we went out there. We tried to collect it, but we couldn't find the guy, you know. So your judgment lies uncollected. And then the other thing is that some people get these billion-dollar judgments against the city of, let's say, Redondo Beach or something, well, everybody looks at that as just being crazy. They don't take you seriously. That's bad image. You'd do much better with $50,000 or $100,000 than you would with $1 billion. Okay? I know it, you got $1 billion worth of pain, but the fact is that you got to put on a good show for the rest of the world. Okay. Anyhow, you see, the Constitution of the United States guarantees the common law is available to you. You have the Seventh Amendment is one place. Article 3, Section 2 says that the judicial power of the United States is available to all cases in law and equity. Well, in law means common law, okay? Statutes are actually equity. So the judicial power is available. So they recognize it. The government recognizes common law. So if you have a common law proceeding, you put on a good show, you run it right, they will back you up. Perhaps reluctantly, but they'll back you up. But we haven't reached the level of acceptance because of, frankly, ignorance. Ignorance is everywhere, in government and out. So we haven't got that automatic acceptance like a judge has when he signs an order. So, but we're working on it with time. But we have to get that acceptance. That there's more to law than just law. You've got to get the cooperation of other people. Now, but you see, the Constitution does acknowledge and does provide backup force, in other words, behind common law. So what is common law? Well, if you ask any attorney, the school teaches him that common law is the case law. Okay? And that's about 1% of it. You know, that's true, but it's just a small percentage. Common law is actually public opinion. It's anything you can get a jury to agree to. Okay? And in the absence of a jury, it's anything the sovereign says. Okay? It's the sovereign's law. And so you run your case under common law. And if you look at the California Constitution, the California Constitution says all courts are courts of record. Well, if they're all courts of record, they should all be run according to the common law. Right? So, if you see you're in statutory law, how do they get the statutory law? Let me explain it. What they do, you see, in a normal case at law, a civil case, you make the accusation. The other person is automatically guilty unless he proves his innocence. We know this is so because if he doesn't answer, we find him guilty and he gets a judgment default. Okay? So you are guilty until proven innocent in a civil court. So the government has a special limitation. They are required to consider you innocent until you're proven guilty. Not only that, but they cannot proceed without you. They have to get personal jurisdiction over you before they can proceed against you. So what they do is they arrest you and they bring you in and they have this little thing called an arraignment. Why do they have arraignment? The reason is because they are securing your agreement to a court not of record. Okay? They say to you, you are accused of violating statute or code such and such. Not common law, but code. How do you plead? Do you plead that it's a valid statute, but you're not guilty? Do you plead it's a valid statute, but you are guilty? Or do you plead it's a valid statute and no contest? Okay, in all cases, you're pleading it's a valid statute. Now, they don't say that. All they say is you're accused of violating it, and if you take the bait and give them a guilty, not guilty, or no contest, you have automatically agreed to the validity of the jurisdiction. Okay, the code. The fourth choice they never tell you, which is I demand a common law court. I demand proceeding in common law in accordance with California Constitution, Article 6, Paragraph 1. And so that's how it's right there. But you have a primary right to contract. So they contract you into an alternative system. Okay? So, now, just exactly what is the common law? Well, again, all the attorneys are taught that common law is case law. But let's take a look here. In truth, common law is generally understood by everybody that not only is it case law, but it's also the common law of England as it was in 1776 when we declared our independence. Okay? And the Constitution recognizes the common law. But It's still unwritten. Now, what does unwritten mean? Unwritten does not mean that it's not written. What it means is that there is no common pinpoint source where you can find the common law defined. Okay? If you look at statutory law, it's real easy with statutory law. You just go to the legislative record, you show there, that's where it came from. There's a procedure followed. Common law doesn't work that way. Basically, the sovereign decrees whatever he thinks the law is, and if public opinion agrees, that's the common law. So, bureaucrats do not particularly understand common law. Okay, so you got to give them something to get their teeth into, because everything has to be in writing. You know, that's how bureaucrats are. So how do you put it in writing? Well, it turns out that we have this little thing called the Confirmatio Cartarum. Now what happened was the Magna Carta came along. Magna Carta basically put some limitations on King John. They basically told him, look, you know, sign this or we'll cut your head off. So he signed it. And the Pope blessed it. But about a year later, the Pope died and King John died. It was a remarkable coincidence. They were died within like about 3 months of each other, 3-4 months. And they created a power vacuum in the religious side, and they created a power vacuum on the king's side, but the noblemen were still organized. They had no power vacuum. So the first thing they understood, you know, they're smart, and they immediately went to the new king, who had not yet established his power base, and they got him to recertify the Magna Carta. And every king after that recertified it to some degree or other with some minor modifications. And so that's how the Magna Carta was kept alive, and it grew stronger with time. Well, King Edward I came along, and he was likewise weak, and the demands were made on him to recertify it. So he came up with this document called the Confirmatio Cartarum. It's up there on the screen. Here. Now it's a little bigger, I think. It'll be a little bigger. There, now can you read it? Confirmatio Cartarum. And this is really a neat little item. Okay, and right here, this is the king speaking. Okay, and he says in the Confirmatio Cartarum, we have confirmed them in all points, and that our justices, sheriffs, mayors, and other ministers, which under us have the laws of our land to guide, shall allow the said charters pleaded before them in judgment in all their points. That is, to wit, the great charter as the common law and the charter of the forest for the wealth of our realm. So, the great charter, that's the Magna Carta, another name for Magna Carta. The Magna Carta is the common law. But notice what it says. It says that all of these king's officers shall allow them pleaded. In other words, you don't have to use the Magna Carta, but if you choose to call the Magna Carta the common law, the officials must accept it as such. Okay? So it's optional with you whether or not it's common law. But they have to take it if you demand it. Okay? So that is the great connection. That's the connection between the Constitution and the Magna Carta. Is the Confirmatio Cartarum. Believe it or not, I found this in a Bar Association law book. I think I give the credit at the end of the article. But the Magna Carta is the common law. Magna Carta is good law in the United States. Especially if you as a sovereign decree it so. Okay? And in my papers, you'll see I decree it so. Alright, so that's the Confirmatio Cartarum. And from there, we go to the Magna Carta. And the Magna Carta has a variety of things that are kind of handy. The one that I'm looking forward to developing sometime in the future is Article 61. I love Article 61. This is the best article in the whole thing, I think. Article 61 defines the procedure for setting up and running a grand jury. That's a real grand jury. I want you to notice something. The Magna Carta specifies specifically 25 members of the nobility are the grand jury. Okay? 25 people. We are all grand jurors, potentially. We are people I hope we're all people in here, okay? Do we have 25 in here?
Yeah.
Do we have enough for a grand jury?
I count 22 lumps.
25, exactly.
25, exactly. Boy, we can tear up the landscape here, the legal landscape. Okay. Not citizens. See, you know you're entitled to a jury of your peers. What's the definition of a peer? You ever thought about that?
Yes.
Who knows what the definition of a peer is? Anybody? Member of the peerage, right. What's the peerage? That's the nobility. In America, before we created citizens of the United States with the 14th Amendment, everybody was a peer unless he was a slave or an Indian. Okay? So everybody was a peer. Today, regardless of color, everybody is a peer. Okay? Because we prohibited discrimination. So we're all peers. We're members of the peerage. So when you're entitled to a jury of your peers, that means somebody who knows he's a sovereign. And there was a case in San Diego about 10 years ago or so. I wish I'd followed up so I could cite it and tell you exactly what it was, but I didn't. I was too innocent at the time to appreciate this. But this guy demanded a jury of his peers, real peers. And there was not a single person in the jury pool who would admit that he wasn't a citizen of the United States. They all insisted that they were subjects. Right? Subject to the jurisdiction. Well, that's not a peer. So finally, the judge ordered the sheriff to go out and gather up some peers. Okay? Because that's the sheriff's authorized to bring in people, if necessary, arrest them for jury duty. Okay? He could not find a single person, and he had to report back to the court. He couldn't find any peers. So, they had to dismiss the case. They couldn't proceed because it was a right to have a jury of peers. But notice this, that it consists of 25 when you read the article. And the thing is that, in fact, here it is. Right here it mentions 25, right there, in the article. You'll notice that all the grand juries in the United States consist of fewer than 25. They're 23, 21, even as few as 17. Okay? Why? Well, it's because they have no real legal power. No lawful power. They have legal power, but not lawful power. Legal means statutory form. Lawful means substance in common law. They have no real authority. And I remember the Orange County Grand Jury did a report on the data processing department of Orange County. And it was a rather scathing report about how sloppy they were, unorganized, and so on, you know. And I remember one of the supervisors saying, well, you know, that's the grand jury's opinion, but they don't know, they don't really know what's going on and what's happening with data processing, you know. That was his position. He couldn't have said that with a grand jury of 25. And I'll tell you something else that's not well known. If you looked up in the code somewhere relating to grand juries, I don't remember where it is, but I know it's there. A grand jury can remove anyone from elected office. It's in there somewhere. Put a grand jury together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you saying that a grand jury to be lawful must have 25 people? So that all these grand juries with fewer than 25 are.
We can vote now.
Blowing in the wind.
They're bogus.
And remove Bush.
They're accepted. They're followed. But when push comes to shove, as the supervisor said, well, they really don't know what's going on. They just don't understand. He wasn't going to change anything in the data processing department. Yes, sir, you were saying?
I said, you mean tell me we can settle this issue with Bush and vote him out of office now in this room?
I'm talking about California rules.
Oh, California rules.
Right. I don't know how it works federally. I don't know. But it's interesting, just to give you a taste of the power of a grand jury, it tells you right here that it says here that, right here. Okay, and here it is. Starts here. And it goes down to goes down a ways, wherever the end of the sentence is, right here. Okay. Yeah, this is all good stuff, right down to here. Yeah, even this. pretty much. But basically, here's what it says. It says basically, all right, if we, our justice, or our bailiffs, or any one of our servants shall have transgressed against anyone in any respect, or shall have broken some one of the articles of peace or security, and our transgression shall have been shown to four barons of the aforesaid 25, those four barons shall come to us, meaning the king and his staff, or if we are abroad, to our justice, meaning their judges, of course, showing to us our error, and they shall ask us to cause that error to be amended without delay. And if we do not amend that error, or we being abroad, if our justice do not amend it within a term of 40 days from the time when it is shown to us, or we being abroad to our justice, the aforesaid four barons shall refer the matter to the remainder of the 25 barons. And those 25 barons, with the whole land in common, shall distrain and oppress us in every way in their power, namely by taking our castles, lands, and possessions, and in every other way they can, until amends shall have been made according to their judgment, saving the persons of ourselves, our queen, and our children. In other words, you can't kill the kids. You can't kill the king and queen. You can't put them in jail. Okay, so you can't touch them personally, but you can take all their properties. Okay, and when amends shall have been made, they shall be in accord with us as they had been previously. Right? Got to be in accord with us. So the grand jury decides when the fight's over. No one else. There's no other authority. Okay, the grand jury is the sole judge as to when this problem is fixed, or whether it's fixed. And when amends shall have been made, they shall be in accord with us as they had been previously. And whoever of the land wishes to do so shall swear that in carrying out all the aforesaid measures, he will obey the mandates of the aforesaid 25 barons, and that with them he will oppress us to the extent of his power. In other words, the king is pre-approving anybody who wants to help the grand jury go against the king. Okay, it's pre-approved. Yes, sir?
If you go into a court demanding common law, trial and ask for a grand jury and they can't provide peers, can you provide your own?
If the court will accept it, I'm assuming you're a defendant. But my question...
No, I never walk into court as a defendant.
Pardon?
I would never walk into court as a defendant.
Well, then why would you be asking that question?
Huh?
Why would you be asking...
To bring a... Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're the plaintiff, like in a counterclaim, if you're the counter plaintiff,
yeah,
you're in the court, why would you want to dilute your authority with a jury? Let the defense ask for a jury, if that's what they want. And usually they don't, because then they know they're cooked, because they're usually very unjust in the issues we handle, typically. See? But, you know, look at traffic court. Traffic court, they secure your agreement for the Nisi Prius court, in other words, not a court of record, and they run it guilty until proven innocent, right? You've seen it. That's how it should be. I know, the judge does the prosecuting. Okay, well, that's the a little bit of Magna Carta.
Would you define baron?
A baron? Well, that's one of the class of nobility. Let's see. I think if we... somewhere in here... That's not the subject for today, but somewhere in here I provide to you a list of the ranks of nobility in England. I don't know where it is. It's somewhere on here. Anyhow, all right. So that pretty well covers the overview. Yeah. Well, lunch is at 12 and it's 12.
Ready?
Yeah, I know it. I bore you, so time just drags on. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you're going to mail the CD.
Are we through recording?
Okay, let's take a break.
Yeah. All right, everybody, would you please? It's Dazzle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to talk about motions. Going back to the main website, it's actually a program on the computer called Dazzle. Right. It's kind of a neat one. Okay, so we'll go back to procedure. Now, what I'm going to talk about is motions, and this is going to be about the form of motions, okay? I'm not going to get into substance. There's many different kinds of motions, and whatever there are,